Hi, everyone. This is Catherine Adams.
And Elizabeth Wallace. And you're listening to Binary System Podcast number 442. And tonight, it's kind of second verse, same as the first. We want to talk about another episode of Beastars, and we want to talk about another couple episodes of season two of Star Trek Lower Decks.
Yeah, I didn't manage to watch Arcane this week. I kind of wanted to give myself a bit of a break on that because I know the next episode is going to be jumping right back into the mess we left at the end of the second arc. And I know that's going to be full of peril and tragedy and all that. So, yes, I managed to watch two episodes of Star Trek Lower Decks. And in one of them, it was where Mariner and Boimler have to take this evil computer to be deposited at Starfleet headquarters, I think, in the holding lab that they have for evil computers. And they crash land. And the computer is trying to get in their heads the entire time. And it's just all kinds of fun. And, I mean, just little random things. Like, the crash shorted out the shuttle's ability to generate food properly. So they keep asking for water or food or something. And it just keeps giving them licorice. And Mariner describes it as, the least nutritious food that tastes the most like poison.
Boy, she's not wrong.
Man. No, she really isn't. And another part, I think it was the same episode. Okay, so Chief Engineer Billups is apparently the son of a planetary queen, but he abdicated because he wanted to have a career in Starfleet. But if he ever has sex and loses his virginity, he automatically becomes the next ruler of the planet. So his mother is always trying to trick him into having sex. And oh my God, the name of the planet is Hyperion, I think. And I think it's all based on medieval stuff. Like, they've renamed all science to sound like magic. And they actually have dragons and castles on their home planet. And you get on board their spaceship and it's just all done up like a Renfest. And it's just, they're all trying to seduce the chief engineer because they want him to be the next ruler. And you'll just have things like a dancing droll, just kind of randomly dancing sexily through an entire scene on a spaceship, and it's just, it doesn't stop being funny.
So funny. And I love how they keep giving us more back histories for these characters. It seems every episode we're just like, wow, they have like a full-fledged life going on here.
And the future of Star Trek is the best future. I mean, when Billups is getting seduced, the Queen has specifically trained his guards to skip foreplay. So they've been hitting on him the entire time. And he goes into the room because he thinks that he's screwed up and it resulted in the death of Rutherford and his mother. So he's just going to have to give up his dream of Starfleet and become the next king, which means he's got to have sex. And he goes into the room that's all been laid out with flower petals and sexy lighting. And it's both of his guards, male and female. And they're both just like licking their lips, ready to jump him. And I'm just like, why is this so appealing? This is just amazingly appealing.
It's so fun. And it's just, it's good hearted. And despite being like sexy all over the place, it's very good hearted.
The second episode that I watched was more of a entire ship storyline. And it was that the entire ship's crew has to go through these training drills and they'll be graded on their performance. But the specific drills they're having to do, all of the Lower Decks people are having to drill as command, and all the command have to drill as Lower Decks. And there are like these pods they go into that is an entire immersive world that they will be working through. And it's just, of course, everybody finds that everybody else's job really sucks. But I was so pleasantly surprised by this episode because the kicker of this is that the drill instructor specifically sabotaged this because she needs at least one ship to fail to justify needing training drills in the first place. And if the ship fails, they're all going to be sent off to different ships. The entire crew is going to be broken up. Nobody will be able to stay on board the Cerritos. So, but they realized that one of the training drills hasn't finished, and it's Boimler. He was one of the only ones that managed to pass his drill. It was like fighting in the Borg, but he can't let it go until he gets a perfect score. So he keeps running it over and over and over again. I thought for sure that at the end, the day would be saved, everybody would be happy, but Boimler would be miserable because he'd be the only person that didn't manage to pass, and that would be a ding on his record, and he'd have to be miserable. Nope, he did fail, but they didn't dwell on it, and it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter even a particle. It's just, they want to make sure that you always feel good when these episodes end. They really do.
And getting to see Mariner and her mom, the captain, work together to defeat the evil drill instructor by going to some planetary crystalline structure, whatever. And the animation is great. And the two of them are just laughing maniacally while the drill instructor is screaming in terror. Oh my God. It's all just so fun.
That is exactly it. It's like everybody involved in this show always just sounds like they're having the best time.
But of course, they had one little bit with, I think one of Mariner's drills was that she had to go on board the ship as it's been taken over by that weird virus that makes everybody have sex all over the place. So she goes in there and she's horrified because it means all of her friends and coworkers are entirely naked and having sex with each other. And I just couldn't stop laughing.
There's not a trope left unturned in this series. There's a Star Trek trope. It's going to get addressed. It really is. The next time you watch one, you'll have to let me know that you're watching because sometimes I'm just like, oh man, this really makes me want to watch it so I can like add more details into it. Cause right now I'm like, geez, that was a couple seasons ago. I'm having trouble remembering it. Time for a rewatch.
Well, how Boimler manages to defeat the evil computer in the first episode that I watched this week was cause it just, you always expect what doesn't happen. People are either hapless or they're surprisingly competent at something. And that this is one of the episodes where Boimler gets to be surprisingly competent.
I know. It's just so nice to see. Every once in a while, he deserves a break. God. Okay, so we're going to jump from there to Beastars. Now, this is Beastars episode 4, I believe?
I think so, yeah.
So, where we left last episode, Lagoshi, and I have been checking, and yes, they are saying Lagoshi, so that's what I'm going to say. Lagoshi's grandfather was in the process of kicking the butts of the Eagles, and he finishes that up perfectly fine. Lagoshi even kind of jumps in to help him out at one point. I think his grandfather says something like, "Do you want to finish off the last one?" Lagoshi's like, "Finish off?" And he just kind of shoves him away, whatever. So we jump from there to Louis is having dinner with his fiance, who I know you've mentioned before because you did a bit of fan art of her at one point.
I did, and that was before I found out that she actually comes back because I thought her storyline was just done and that we were never going to see her. And I was like, well, I would kind of like to know how she feels about that. Well, how she feels about this is they're still engaged. She knows he's got a prosthetic leg now, and she asks him in the middle of a polite dinner conversation if that means he's still able to function like with reproduction. And she's just like, yeah, she wants to know if everything still works and if he wants to have sex. And he's a little appalled, but she just says, well, I probably should have found a more graceful way to ask that. And she puts down a card and says, I have a room at the hotel. And then we go to them having sex. Except not really.
Yeah. Well, I have a note here. It just says, Louis' fiance is forward as fuck. So she's absolutely. Now, he does kind of threaten her at one point and says something like, you know, the Horns conglomerate is not so desperate to be able to have to answer a question like that or something like that. Like, he tries to take her down a few pegs. She's not bothered at all. But yeah, they end up in bed and the entire time, he's like having trouble concentrating because this doesn't feel right. He's having sex or about to have sex with a herbivore, and he's remembering Juno's kiss and thinking like he's comparing the two kisses, which is not a good sign, noting that this kiss now doesn't have the same teeth as the kiss with Juno. So yeah, it's not really good. And then he tries to bully his own brain into it, but he doesn't. And instead, we get an extended barfing scene. I'm like, really, you
yep,
guys?
That's
really?
It.
Damn it.
I saw that and was like, oh, yeah, this is going to be bad for Elizabeth. She cannot stand
it's
that.
It's fine. Oddly enough, I can handle like cartoon barf better because it's all drawn and whatever. I mean, I wasn't particularly pleased with the sounds. Let me tell you something, just in case you're ever wondering. There are some really hilarious episodes of Rick and Morty that are like, barfing is actually the plot point of the episode, so sometimes I just have to power through it, but okay.
But
so.
I'll tell you the thing about the scene that confused me the most is that he's
I know what I know exactly what you're going to say. The line that he says.
He's trying to bully himself into having sex, and he refers to himself as such a virgin. I'm like,
yep.
Did Louis forget that he's had sex with Haru? Did the writers forget that he had sex with Haru? He's talking about not being able to do it with a herbivore because he's still thinking of a carnivore that kissed him. I'm like, why don't you think about the herbivore you had sex with? I mean, if it's that big of a deal.
Yeah, I was wondering if there's a fourth option. I mean, it's a show like this is not going to show like actual porn and everything. Did they not have actual sex? Was it just like really intense clothes off makey-outy time? I mean, it's like, if you don't see actual penetration, then you could say that maybe they didn't have sex. I don't know, but that's what I wondered. I was like, did that not count or did it not actually happen? I don't know.
And they never do really address the size difference. You would think that there would be some difficulties with someone as large as a great big stag and someone as small as a dwarf rabbit. So I don't know. Maybe. Well, the show will probably tell us at some point, but it really did strike me as odd that he referred to himself as such a virgin. And maybe he's just referring to the fact that he's never had sex with, as far as I know, with an actual grown herbivore, his own species. I don't know.
It could be. I don't know. Yeah, I wonder, too, that would be the fifth option there, is that when he called himself a virgin, either that means he was just talking down to himself because he's relatively inexperienced, or maybe there's a translation error. So I don't know.
Who knows? I think all of the storylines about Legoshi in this episode involve he's having to deliver for the noodle shop, and he's having to go to the marine section, which he doesn't understand any of their language. So his boss, who is, I believe, an owl, I think is who runs the noodle shop, gives him a phrase to repeat in marine language, which totally doesn't help because he goes to the right spot that has a little mailbox for it, whatever. And this fish comes out, and the fish is really kind of appealing, but it's like talking in a language none of us understand, and just like wide open eyes and wide open mouth. And he can't manage to finagle the situation until a seal walks up behind him and helps translate. And I love how they animate the seal's face in this.
I was just going to say the same thing. The movements of his mouth are so precise. It's just really especially well done. Now, before any of that happens, though, we have a brief view of the mayor, who is trying to enjoy some tea. He gets a call from somebody who's very angry that the horse is snooping around. And the mayor says something like, oh, you reptiles, just go bask in the sun or something. So this is obviously like the mysterious person who's kind of running the underworld right now, we think.
Uh-huh.
But who is like the reptile that he's talking about? The only one we've met so far. Well, we had some like tough guys at one point that were in a fight with Legoshi, I think. But the only other one we see is Legoshi's grandfather. And it doesn't sound like him.
No, I don't think so. So I don't know what that's going on at all. The B-star, the horse, gets some news from his one little rat compatriot, whatever, who says they found some information on the wolf that he was researching, Legoshi, who had a devouring incident. And he's found his background, and it turns out his parentage is Komodo dragon. And then the horse automatically knows who he's talking about because he has a flashback to how that person he was talking about in a previous episode who left and betrayed him, he remembers how it all happened.
Yep. We get a little flashcard that says 36 years earlier, and it's the horse, and he's talking to Legoshi's grandfather. And apparently, the B-star was given to the horse, but the horse was saying they both should have gotten it because they both rescued a child from a burning building, I think. But I don't know, the Legoshi's grandfather doesn't seem to be bothered about it at all, but they do kind of make an agreement that they're basically going to act as the B-star together and basically save the lives of people, keep them from getting hurt, including a young female wolf that is about to be killed for her coat.
Yeah, and you can see as soon as she starts waking up from whatever she was drugged with, and the first thing she sees is Legoshi's grandfather, and he looks at her, and it's really obvious the two of them instantly fall in love. And the next thing you know, the B-star is reminiscing about the fact that they dated for 6 months, and then he had a talk with Legoshi's grandfather, who said he was leaving. He was not going to be B-star anymore because the wolf lady is now pregnant, and he's found something that's more important than trying to save the entire world. He wants to be there for her and her kid, and the B-star is furious.
Yep. Punches him in the mouth and everything. So, I was wondering, of course, I was just like, is it really his kid? But apparently a doctor's examined the pregnancy and says it's like a miracle pregnancy.
Because it shouldn't happen. I mean, a mammal a Komodo dragon, in the real world, that would not happen.
Yeah, even the horse was just saying, it's like, that's not possible. But yeah, so the horse feels betrayed because they were going to change the world together. And then as soon as the Komodo dragon found happiness with someone else, he left. So, yay.
A little bit more about Legoshi and the seal. He goes to visit the seal at his apartment because it turns out the seal's living in the same apartment that Legoshi is. So I'm like, what, is the entire town there now? But
yeah.
And Legoshi comes in to visit to have tea and nude's naked and he freaks out. And then he just finally is like, no, I have to be less judgmental about this. So they just sit and he doesn't, because clothes aren't comfortable for the seal because he's a marine animal. But the conversation they have, the seal talks about the fact that in the ocean, the larger animals eat the smaller animals. And when the larger animals die, they then get eaten by the smaller animals. So everything lives in balance. So it's all harmonized, living in harmony. And Legoshi's wishing that could happen on land. I'm like, well, I don't think that's really possible because once you start eating the smaller animals, it becomes a big problem because the smaller animals have families and jobs and things that they would rather do other than be eaten by a larger animal. So it seems a little bit, I don't know, a little bit Pollyanna-ish to say that, oh, to live in balance and to understand that the larger eat the smaller all the time. No, I'm not buying it. I don't even know how that would work in the marine. I mean, the marine animals have post office boxes and can order udon noodles. So obviously they're not just mindless things that get eaten up for lunch and nobody cares.
Yeah, I think also that they're forgetting the fact that if that is the case, that's the way that it works. You are, because the seal even says, you know, they don't have a word for devouring in his world and everything lives in balance because he's a carnivore too. And I'm like, okay, I get that. Except if that works, it means the entire society is carnivores. Because what if the wolves eat all the mice, when the wolf dies, the mice aren't going to eat them because that's not how it works. Even though I guess some herbivore animals, like they've cut all these like videos of deer eating meat at this point. I'm like, deer Jesus eating, Christ.
Specifically, wow. Deer eating snakes. That's a horrifying, that's like something out of Lovecraft.
Yeah, that's pretty intense. But yeah, I mean, basically you have to have, sure, if maybe the carnivores all want to go off together and they all eat each other, that'd be great. But that's not a solution that's going to work for the herbivores.
No. So I'm curious to see where they take this. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it just, I mean, it was beautiful imagery with them sitting in the seal's apartment and he's got these mobiles hung up with a fish and whatever, and he likes sitting there and imagining that he's in the water now, and it's just, oh, it's very peaceful and pretty.
It's very sweet.
And they've been doing a different little mini video at the end of every episode.
Yes.
And is it, I don't think I watched the first couple, but has it all been that like paper cut sort of animation to it?
I think it has, yeah. And it all seems to be maybe extending the story a little bit, because this one, I think what we were seeing was either Legoshi's grandmother, the wolf who fell in love with Legoshi's grandfather, mm-hmm. or someone else. It doesn't look like Juno. It's kind of hard to tell because it's a paper cut style, but their faces are just a little bit different. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure. But yeah, it was all very dreamlike and very pretty. Had images of Haru falling into bed as well.
Yeah. So I don't know. I'm trying to think of anything else from the episode. You were talking about how they animated the seal's mouth. And I was thinking about how they animate Legoshi's grandfather's mouth. And it reminds me of Bill the Tiger. It's the same. I guess it's because you're having to speak around all of those fangs that they have to do something similar. But yeah, it definitely reminded me of that.
Yeah. They just do such a good job. They really do.
Yeah. And I think one of the reasons why the wolf woman fell in love with Legoshi's grandfather was she comes out of it and she looks over and she tells him, your scales sparkle like jewels. And that's probably one of the nicest things that a mammal had told the guy who has had to deal with people deciding that he's not trustworthy because he's got venom. So yeah, it's, I hope we get to see a little bit more of that because we don't really see a romance between the two of them, just the two of them exchanging glances. And then the next thing they know, they've been dating for 6 months and now they've got a kid on the way.
Yeah. And the horse says something to him at one point about how, you know, childbirth is going to be very dangerous. So we don't know, does she survive childbirth? But we also know it's 36 years in the past. Mm-hmm. So that means his son would have had to have been like 18 years old when he became a father in order for Legoshi to now be old enough to be almost ready to graduate high school. So
right.
Yeah, it was like a really young parent situation, I think.
Sure, sounds like it. Mm-hmm. Couple other things that I've been working on this week. I'm working on another drawing for Mighty Orbots. It's part of a series that I've been working on. And to get, you know, reference pictures, I've been watching the episodes because they're all on YouTube right now.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, the So the storyline is the sort of simplistic thing that someone who was 11 years old in the 80s would like. And the voice acting is sometimes a little goofy, and they've got a lot of puns that they throw in like that. And they do have, you know, shortcuts that happen because it is a Saturday morning cartoon. So sometimes they have shortcuts. But I think their shortcuts are better than the quality of most of the other cartoons that were on at the time. And when they do, like, when they bring their A-team in, it's just stunningly pretty. And all of it, yeah. I mean, the backgrounds are so beautifully rendered. You know, these you know, the Mighty Orbots headquarters has this almost 60s, 70s sort of abstract design going on everywhere for no reason other than the fact that it looks cool. And it's just, I'm enjoying it. I mean, you have to sort of grit your teeth and not mute everything, so I want to understand everything, but it does get kind of silly, and there's no paying attention to anything about science or physics or whatever, because it's all very foolish. But like they fight a big magnetic monster in the first episode by turning into the Mighty Orbots robot and punching it. I'm like, but they're metal too. Never mind.
Fine. Don't logic the plot, Catherine. Come on.
Yeah. So
I don't know. I just loved that show when it came out. And to this day, I always think, because the big bad guy in the series is named Umbra, which if you look up the definition of Umbra, it's the darkest part of a shadow. And I'm like, that's excellent naming right there. That's a great idea.
Yeah, because they didn't bother explaining that to everybody. You would have to either know what that means or look it up and feel cool about it afterwards.
Yeah. Great idea. I've, of course, been continuing to watch BoJack Horseman. I'm on the final season. I'm on, like, the last few episodes of the final season. Oh, I don't want it to end. I just am really enjoying it.
It really is amazing how he manages to sabotage himself in pretty much every instance. I mean, I keep coming back to that deer who was his best friend, who was, like, just the epitome of the most wonderful supporting friend you could have. So you have to think, how badly would he have to mess up to the point where she would throw him out and never speak to him again? And the answer is pretty damn bad.
Now, here's an interesting thing. I don't want to bring down the tone of the episode, but of course, Neil Gaiman published a response to all of the stuff, the stories that have been coming out and everything. And it was very much like, no, all the relationships were consensual, you know, every single one. And you're like, ugh. So I thought it was so interesting that BoJack Horseman gets called on the carpet for the whole thing with Sarah Lynn and her death and how he gave her the heroin and everything. And he needed to go on a show and deliver kind of an explanation, a non-apology type of thing, that whatever. And I wrote down the exact text of it that he ended up reading aloud to Princess Carolyn to say, you know, okay, what about this? And he says, my relationship with Sarah Lynn was complicated, as relationships between addicts often are. However, certain aspects of the story are inaccurate or exaggerated. This story has started an important conversation, and I look forward to continuing to work on my own progress. And I'm like, wow, go back and read Neil Gaiman's response to what happened. There's a lot of parallels. It's really scary.
He says that exact thing. He has to work on himself, that he's looking back and seeing some things that he thinks were probably problematic, whatever, like, and he doesn't say this out loud, but having sex with his nanny, who he had met like a day before and who was young and dependent on him for a job. And it's just, I don't know, the more you hear about it, the less excusable any of it becomes. And I know it's problematic to try somebody in the court of opinion, but I keep coming back to a doodle or a cartoon that someone drew ages ago. And it was like a bunch of women who were all, you know, dressed up as like caricatures of the bad guys from the Justice League cartoon. And they're laughing maniacally and plotting about the fact that they're going to accuse these men of doing this and of sexual assault and all this other stuff. And then we will sit back and we will rake in the rewards that come to all women who accuse powerful men of sexual assault. And then everybody just kind of sits there. And it's just like, yeah, there's no upside to this. And I think about the thing with BoJack and Gina when he like was in a coked out rage and strangles her on live TV, and the tape gets out, and he like, she comes back after, you know, a few days later, and they're going to have to do a big discussion with the media. And he's like, I am so sorry. I will tell everybody it was my fault. And she tells him no, because she has been working so hard to build a career. And this TV show they were on was the first time that she had finally gotten some accolades and things were looking up, and she was not going to be defined by the fact that a famous person attacked her. And it's just, God. Yep. I mean, I'd never even thought about that. Like, even if you get justice, you're going to be known as the person who got attacked by this and that and the other person.
Yep.
And I don't think any of these people are looking for money from Neil Gaiman. But
I don't know. At this point, it's just like, can you imagine having gone through some of the things that these women went through and then watching that person not only be perfectly fine, but like get plaudits and accolades from everybody saying, oh, he's such a wonderful person. And sitting there going, he's not somebody. And all these people are saying, oh, we need to not do the Whisper Network or anything. People need to come forward and say this. And these women are just like, we did, we have, nobody listened, you know? So it's like,
infuriating.
Anyway, I didn't want to bring down the tone, but I saw Bojack's little script that he was going to read. I'm like, that's uncomfortably close to what Neil Gaiman wrote.
It must be. I imagine if you look at a bunch of powerful men that have gotten accused of something that they can't duck away from, I'm sure the script's pretty similar in all those cases. It's like not admitting any kind of fault, but just saying it's an uncomfortable situation that I'm going to go and deal with by myself so you guys don't have to think about it anymore.
That's right. But to end the BoJack thing on a lighter note, the character of Judah is just, every time I rewatch this series, he's so good. And he has some like triumphant moments and everything, despite the fact that he's like, seems kind of monotone and everything. But every time I see him, I'm just like, oh, I forgot how much I like Judah. He's so cool.
It is so interesting and such a wonderful choice by the writers that like, we see that moment of him telling Princess Caroline that he loves her. And then the next thing you know, they've gotten married, but they've gotten married privately. So the big public thing is just like this media sort of thing they've put on that's just, you know, and you don't see Judah and you don't see her interact because it's private. Now, nobody gets to look in on that. They will have their life without anybody bothering them. And I thought, oh, what an interesting choice that is.
It was such a great choice. Plus, that final episode was really just kind of just the main characters. You know, we didn't have any tertiary characters, anybody who hadn't been in like the majority of the episodes of that show. We just didn't see him in that episode. And I'm like, that was a cool choice too.
That was very good. And the last thing I wanted to bring up was Nathan on his podcast, Midlife Crisis Task Force. Their friend Hap has had a respiratory thing, not COVID, we hope, but he's been feeling kind of bad. So he wasn't able to meet for their usual evening to record stuff. And Nathan had an idea, but he needed another person to bounce the ideas off. So he invited me to guest spot on Midlife Crisis Task Force.
Hey.
So I believe the episode will be dropping sometime after this episode drops. And it's going to be about ChatGPT. And it is eye-opening.
Oh,
so I'm looking forward to hearing when Nathan finishes the edit on that. But I'll go ahead and send everybody a link when that gets ready to go.
Excellent. We really need to do more guest stuff. You
we
know,
do.
Having more guest stuff on our podcast, guesting on other people's podcasts. I'm sure we have friends who also have podcasts.
I'm
you know?
Sure. Isn't that kind of the thing for everybody now? Mm-hmm. Everybody's got a pod. It used to be everybody had a live journal. Now everybody's got a podcast.
Yep, damn straight. We got to make our opinions known. Gosh darn it. But I guess that will wrap us up for the week. So make sure to check out pixelatedgeek.com for all the book reviews, the movie reviews, the comic book reviews, the photo galleries. One, I am working on a review of the latest issue of Nice House on the Ocean, Nice House by the Sea, Nice House by the Sea. And it's the story is just going to a really interesting place because more characters have been introduced and the dynamic is changing. And I really like what's going on there.
Good.
So
okay.
Hopefully I will have that out very soon.
Well, I've already dropped a review of Stephen King's You Like It Darker.
Ooh.
So that's so glad to get another short story collection from Stephen King because it occurred to me the other person whose short story collections I loved and adored and was always hoping for was Neil Gaiman. Everybody else, if you've got a short story collection that you're releasing, let me know about it. I'm trying to find my next, you know, favorite author for that sort of thing because it's going to be really tough to read anything, even reread anything of Gaiman's after this.
Oh, yeah. And if you can send us some short stories, we'll read them and we'll review them on the site, pixelatedgeek.com, all that and more. So next week, I don't believe, we still won't have a Night Vale episode quite yet. Got another week to go on with that. But we do have two more episodes of Arcane that we really should watch.
We should commit to watching at least one more of those this week so we can talk about it next week.
Yes, and whatever else shiny thing distracts us. So one way or the other, we will talk to everybody in 1 week.
Talk to y'all later. to be deposited in Star Trek, and they managed to crash land, and the computer is trying to...
Hold it. Had to be disposed in Star Trek, you said?
Sorry. What is it? Starfleet?
I think so.
Starfleet. Yeah. Okay, let me try that again.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Episode 4 of the final season.
Hang on. I'm going to look this up because now I'm not sure.
That's probably a good idea.
Yeah, well, let's see here. Come on. All right, come on, computer. I probably should ask you to do this. My computer is so slow. Come on. And we need to go to season 3. Oh, come on. Yeah, it's really struggling. Okay, you're right. It is 4.
Oh. Okay, good.
I need to just go ahead and close all these things out so my computer will stop hissing at me.
I will jump right where I left off. Lugosi's grandfather was in the process of kicking the butts of the evils, but we do have... Ouch, cat, no, get down, stop gnawing on me,